We're holding on your Gimel Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. We learned the last thing we learned yesterday was that the Mishnah, going back to Tess Amud Beis, had said that kshehizik, when there's a nezek caused, then the mazik is obligated to pay. So we said, what is that adding when we already had that phrase in the first Mishnah? In the Masechta, so we said two possibilities. Well, first we started with a machloikus when the Mishnah says Rishus HaNizik BaHamazik, when it talks about a chotzer that's owned jointly by two people. Are we saying a person is chayev for nizik in there or potter? Rav Chista had said that he's chayev for shein and regel in such a chotzer. Rav Elazar would say that he's potter for it, because depending on how they parse the Mishnah. We mentioned in that connection then that the words kshehizik chova mazik. So according to Rav Chista, we're going to say that we're going to say both of them agree that he's chayav for keren in such a chotzer. So according to the so we said Shmuel at the beginning of the Masechta holds that keren has not yet been mentioned as an avnezikin. So therefore our Mishnah is implying it now. According to Rav, who says we already included it, then we said that we brought a brisa that kshehizik chova mazik comes to include cases involving the four shomim. So we said the brisa had said then that it includes the four shomim shehizika behema birshusan, where an animal causes damage in their rishus. So then we said that he pays chatzi nezek or nezek shalom, as the case may be. So now let's analyze that point. Omer Ma'ar, we said in the Brayse, Shehizik Chova Mazik, Lahavi Shavichinu Ba'asher, Nesesach Ba'asacher. The question is, Heichi Domi, what scenario are we talking about involving one of these four shomrim? Whose animal caused the damage? Ilema de Azke Torah de Mashil, La Torah de Shoyal. Are we talking about the, let's say, for example, in the case of a borrower? So we're talking about then, so Reuven lent an animal to Shimon. So are we talking about now that Reuven's animal that he lent to Shimon damaged Shimon's own ox. So now we're saying then that so now we're saying that Reuven is saying to that Shimon is saying to Reuven, you have to pay for the damage to my ox, chatzi nezek or nezek shalom, as the case may be. Why? Let Reuven say to Shimon, Ilu Azik Ba'alma, look, my shur that you borrowed from me, your shoyl, your chayev, and everything involving that shur. So if that shur had damaged somebody else's shur, Bois L'Shalumi At, you would have to pay, because after all, you're a shoyl and you have full responsibility. Ashtad Azgil Turdi Duch, now that it injured your ox, but in the Shalumi, I should have to pay. What's the logic? You were the one who was careless, because you're the shoyl. You're supposed to be watching that animal and make sure that it doesn't gore or damage or whatever. And it didn't. Why should I have to pay you? You're the one responsible. So it can't be that case on the face of it. El of the Azke Torah the shoyl the Torah the Mashil. Are we talking about the other way around, that Shimon's own ox injured the ox that he had borrowed from Reuven? So no, on the contrary, so we're saying that if he's a tam, he pays chatzi nezek. Why? Leimalei, again, Reuven should be able to say, ilu itzek ba'alma, if my shur had been injured by somebody else, bois l'shalomi kula torah, you would have to pay for the entire thing, because again, you're a shoyl and you have full responsibility. Hashta da'azke torah didoch, now that it's your own shur that caused the damage, paugan nizko hudam shamasli, you want to argue because your ox is a tam, you should only have to pay chatzi nezek? So no matter how we do it, it seems that the scenario of the Braisa doesn't seem to work. How are you ever going to have that he's only paying chatzi nezek? Either in the case where it's Reuven's ox that damaged, he should be completely potter, and Shimon, in this case where it was Shimon's own ox that he damaged, then fine, you know, it's his own problem. It's the equivalent of one of his oxen damaging one of his own, where obviously there's nobody to pay. And in the other case, he should be paying nezek shalom. So the answer is la'olam da'azke tota de mashal la'tota de shoyl. We are in fact talking about that the ox that he had borrowed from Reuven injured his own, Shimon's ox. So you're asking then in that case, then why then Reuven should be able to say to Shimon, well, in that case, look, you're responsible for anything that happens with that ox. Why are you telling me I have to pay? Because we can say Hocha Maiskinen, Shekibel all of Shmiras Gufoy, we can say the case is that Shimon accepted on himself the watching of the goof of the animal itself, meaning that he'll prevent the animal from getting damaged by anything else. But he did not take on himself that he's going to watch it to make sure that it doesn't injure others. So let's say, to begin with, when he first borrowed the animal or became one of the other three kinds of shomrim, he made the deal to begin with. Look, I'm borrowing or renting or whatever this ox from you. I'm going to make sure that I return you the ox intact. So I'm going to work to make sure that another ox or whatever doesn't injure it. But I'm not taking responsibility in case it goes out and injures another ox. That one I'm leaving on you. And then, of course, the other guy agrees. You have a machlokas, you're showing him what happens if he doesn't specify one way or the other. Do we assume that by default or not? But whatever, the point is that such a thing can be arranged. So now when the ox went and injured Shimon's own ox, then yeah, so Reuven is obligated to pay in the usual way, chatzi nezek for a tam, nezek sholem for a muad, because that's not part of Shimon's responsibility. Had Shimon accepted responsibility for that as well, then yeah, the point that we said before would be valid, that Reuven could tell him in that case, it's your problem, not mine. Tosfos, by the way, points out, now, why didn't the Gemara say the other way around? You could say that, let's say, he accepted that he'll watch the animal to make sure it doesn't injure others, but not watch it to make sure that it itself doesn't get injured. And then we could say that we're talking about that it was the other way around, that Shimon's ox injured it. And the answer is that wouldn't be very common. When you borrow something or you rent something, whatever, it's normally understood that you're taking responsibility that it will get back to the owner intact. Whether you're taking on Shmiras Nezakov is another matter. You might not, but to say I'm not taking responsibility for anything that happens to that animal, it could happen, of course, but it's rather unlikely. Which in that case, Tosfos says, well, if you didn't take Shmiras Nezakov, also, isn't it poshut? Then why does the Braisa even have to say that? And still, you could argue that maybe maybe he's not willing to accept responsibility for Nizokin that the animal causes to others, but maybe at least if it damaged his own ox, at least we should say that maybe to that extent, maybe Reuven can tell him, look, you know, it was your own ox after all. At least you should have been more careful with that. Fine, you didn't accept that it's not going to go and injure Levi's or Yehuda's ox or whatever. That's on me. But here it went and injured your own ox, Shimon. Shouldn't you realize that was a little careless of you? And therefore, we're saying that no, it's not so. Well, the Gemara says, if that's how you're going to learn the Braisa, that's the scenario where he accepted Shmiras Gufoy, but not Shmiras Nezakov, Ema Sefer, then look at the next part of the Braisa, where it continues, Nifritza B'Layla. It said, if the door or the wall or whatever of the stall where the animal, or the barn where the animal was being kept, was broken open by night, Osha Pratsua Listim, or robbers broke it down, the yotz of Izika, and the animal went out and caused damage, Potter, then we're saying the shomer is Potter, because after all, he guarded it as he could. Well, the question is, how by Yom Chayev? Now, the implication seems to be that if this had happened by day, he would be Chayev, only because by night, and he couldn't have been expected to know what's going on at night, then he's Potter. Tosfos later on in the Masechta, but we're at the beginning of the sixth parak when we bring this din in a different context of Nifritza B'Layla, Tosfos mentions two possibilities. First of all, if it happens by day, there's more likely to be a coil of it that people know that it was broken down, therefore he's likely to hear of it sooner, and therefore it's his responsibility to do something with it. And second of all, you could say, because even if he does find out at night, you can't expect him to go schlep out by night and go catch the animal and to go run after the animal in the dark, as opposed to by day, he doesn't have that excuse. Anyway, the implication in the Braisa seems to be that if this had happened by day, then he would be chayev for any of the two reasons that Tosfos says later. What do you mean? The fact is, we're saying that the Braisa is talking about, we're to begin with, he didn't accept any responsibility for making sure that the animal doesn't cause damage. So whether by night or whether by day, either way, why are we being mechayev him? And yet the Braisa is implying that if it was by day, then he would be chayev. Why? So the answer is hochi kamar. you're right. What the Braisa means is im kibble all of Shmiras Nezok of Chayev, the Braisa, in other words, is in effect is missing a phrase. If he had accepted Shmiras Nezok of, then he would be Chayev for anything that for any damage that the animal causes. However, even in that case where he has accepted Shmiras Nezakov, if it got broken open by night, or if robbers broke it open, the Yotzavizika, and it went out and caused damage, Potter, even then he would be Potter. Even though he accepted Shmiras Nezakov, we still have the considerations that Tosfos mentions later on, that either at night there's less of a coil of it, and therefore he may not have known that this happened, or that even if he does know, you can't expect him to go start running around by night to find the animal. As far as what would happen with the mashil in that case, there you have different rishonim talk about. He has no way of knowing that the door broke open, for example, or that listim broke it open. Therefore, the Rashba argues he would be potter regardless. The Ravid, on the other hand, learns that if we're talking about that loy kibble all of Shmiras Nezakov, then he has to be responsible 24/7, and therefore, and he wouldn't have the excuse of Nifritza Balayla. But in any case, we're saying that the Shomer would be potter in that case because it was by night, even if he had accepted Shmiras Nezakov. Okay, so that explains the Braisa. So now getting back to the machlokas of Rav Chista and Rav Elazar. So again, Rav Chista had said that in a chotzer ashutfin, in a chotzer that Reuven and Shimon own jointly. So now we're not talking about a mashal and shoyl or about abar shoyminim anymore. Now we're talking about the regular case where Reuven and Shimon own a chotzer in partnership. And Reuven's animal goes and causes damage to Shimon's property in that chotzer, eats his peiros or steps on his kalim or whatever, shein v'regel. So Rav Chista had said Reuven would be chayiv for that, and Rav Elazar had said he would be potter for it. So the Gemara says, 80, is that so, according to Rav Elazar, that he should be potter? V'hatani Rav Yosef, didn't Rav Yosef teach a braisa, chatzara shutfin v'apunda, a chotzer that belongs to two partners, as well as a punduk, an inn, where many people stay over. Chayev behen ala shein v'ala regel. A person is chayev in it for any damage that his animal causes with it, with shein and regel. In other words, the point is, Rashi says, it's not like a reshus harabim, where in a reshus harabim we would say he's potter for shein and regel, because he would say, my animal has every right to walk down the street, and it's your responsibility. You shouldn't have put your peiros or your kalim or whatever in reshus harabim. Here, you don't say that, because it's only meant for the people who actually stay there, only the people who own the chotzer, or only the guests in the inn. So the Braisa says that he's chayim on Shein Ven Regel. Tshuvta de Rav Elazar. Wouldn't that be a contradiction on Rav Elazar? The answer is Amalach Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar is going to answer you back. Tisbra masnisa migay pligi. What do you think that the Braisas themselves don't argue? Do you think there's no other Braisa that I can bring in support of my position? Very well, Rav Yosef has his Braisa that supports Rav Chista's position, but I'm going to bring you another Braisa that says differently. So in that case, then I'm not contradicted by the first one, because okay, you have different opinions of Tanoim. Vahatanya, don't we learn in a brisa? Rav Shimon and Elazar explain that there are four general rules as far as nezakin when it comes to the rishus in which the damage takes place. The first one, kol shor rishus l'nizak v'loy l'mazik, where it's the rishus of the nizak, of the one who suffered the damage, and not of the mazik, chayev bakol, then he's chayev in everything. So in other words, so this is the prop. This is Shimon's property. Reuven's animal goes in there and eats Shimon's fruit, or steps on his kalim, or we're going to say further down on the Amud, gores Shimon's ox or whatever. Then in all cases, Reuven is going to be chayev because he had no business bringing his animal in there. The second one, the mazik, if the reshus belongs to the mazik and not to the nizik, potter mikol, then he's potter from everything, the other way around, because like we learned yesterday, Reuven has every right to say to Shimon, what is your shur, or what are your peiros, or whatever, doing in my chotzer. So then he'd be potter for anything that happens. The third case, lazev lazev, the third case, says Rav Shimon Elazar, where the property is jointly owned by both of them, or where both of them have a right to be there. For example, you have, like we said, a chotzer that belongs to the two partners. So Reuven and Shimon both own the chotzer jointly, or a bika, or a valley where there are many different fields. So then potter bala shein bala regel. So then he'd be potter for shein and regel over there, because again he has the right to bring his animal in there. On the other hand. So, or particularly, not so much because he has the right to bring in his animal, but because the pasuk describes, when it mentions the concept of shein v'regel, it says that he brings his animal uvir b'sdei acher, and it destroys in another person's field. Here, it's not sdei acher because both the mazik and the nizik have rishus to be there, so therefore it can't be called sdei acher. So in that case, says Rav Shimon Elazar. So potter bala shein bala regel. So it'll be potter for anything, for any damage that his animal does over there with shein or regel. On the other hand, when it comes to goring and the various tools of goring that we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, valen gifa, for pushing with its body, valen shicha, or biting, valen revitza, or deliberately lying down on kelim and breaking them, valen beita, or kicking, all of which are tools of keren, tam mashalom chatzin nezek, mor mashalom nezek shalom. Then you have the usual rules of goring, where the tam is going to pay chatzin nezek and the mor is going to pay nezek shalom. So that's the third category, where the property belongs equally to both of them, and both of them have a right, and both of them have a right to be there. Of course, by the way, the Rashba points out, we don't mean that everybody is potter over there. We mean Reuven and Shimon. We can talk about who's potter over there. Obviously, if Levi brings his animal into that chatzara shurfin and it damages Reuven's or Shimon's property, obviously Levi is going to be chayev, because relative to him, it's not a chatzara shurfin. Anyway, the fourth case continues from Shimon Elazar. Loy lazev, loy lazev. What about if the animal, what about if the chotzer, what about if the area does not belong to either one of them? Which we're gonna explain later on what that means exactly. But right now we're saying that it means, right now let's assume that it means that it doesn't belong to either of them. For example, a chotzer that does not belong to both of them, which again right now that sounds like it means it doesn't belong to either of them. We're gonna figure out later whether that's what it means. Anyway, the braisa continues. Then he's going to be chayev for shein and regel in it, because so that would be like so he's going to be chayev in it for shein and regel because it's not his chotzer. It is sdei acher. And then alan a gicha, alan a shicha, alan a gicha, alan a shicha, alan a gicha, alan a revitza, alan a beita. And then for keren and its various toldos, then we're going to have before tam mashalom chatzin nezek mord mashalom nezek shalim. Fine. So that's the braisa. So now says Rav Elazar, katoni mias chatzara shurfin rabika potter bala shein rala regel. So now the bottom line is, the braisa says that in a chotzer of shurfin and in a valley, then he's potter for shein and regel, which exactly agrees with what Rav Elazar is saying. So there you go, says Rav Elazar. So I have a braisa that supports what I'm saying. Well, the Gemara asks, Kasha Adodi. So the fact is, the two braises contradict each other. Neither braisa says a name on it, so we have to assume that they're both a stam braisa, which would go according to everybody. So what is the deal? Is he potter and chatzara shurfin, like Rabbi Yosef's braisa, or is he okay? The second one says Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Does that mean the second one is only according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar, and the Chachamim disagree? So the two braises seem to contradict each other. So how do we reconcile that? So Rashi explains that this Kasha Hadadi is actually the Gemara's question. Rav Elazar has finished bringing this proof. Rav Elazar says, look, I have a braisa that supports me. The fact that contradicts Rabbi Yosef's braisa, in effect, Rav Elazar is saying that's not my problem. On the other hand, the Raivad learns over here that no, the Kasha Hadadi is actually part of Rav Elazar's statement, that he's saying that he's saying, you know, on the face of it, it seems like the two braises contradict each other. We're going to reconcile the two braises, and then we can answer, in fact, that it's true that there are going to be cases of chatzara shotfin when you're going to be chayev for shein and regel, and cases where you're going to be potter. So in other words, he's saying that when I said to begin with that he's potter entirely, that he's potter, it wouldn't mean potter entirely. It would mean sometime there can be cases where he's potter, and then on the other hand, there can be cases where there can be cases where he's chayev. So anyway, but according to Rashi, now this is the Gemara asking, and the Gemara is going to reconcile the two braises. In other words, according to Rashi, Rabbi Lozer is saying that my statement that he's potter for Shein Veregel is absolute in a Chatzara Shukfin. The Gemara now is going to point out that it may not necessarily be so. So the answer is, Kitanyahi b'chotzi miyuchedes lozev lozev bein l'peiras bein l'shvarim. The answer is this last braisa is talking about a chotzer that's reserved for both of them. Both of them have joint ownership in it, and both of them have the right to bring peiros in there or to bring oxen in there. Now you can have a chotzer that's too small for oxen, or that to begin with they make a deal between them that it's not the kind of place where you should bring in your ox because we expect to store fragile goods over there. So you can have a case where they've mutually agreed to begin with, or that oxen are not going to be brought in there, or somehow you have such an arrangement, whether they made it explicitly or not. So the braisa is talking about, so the last braisa, the one with the four with Rav Shimon ben Elazar's four basic rules, is talking about where each one is allowed to bring peiros or oxen in there. So therefore, that's what we're saying. And chatzara shutfin, he's potter, because then it's not sdei acher. He has every right to have his peiros in there, but he also has every right to have his animal in there. Where's Rabbi Yosef's braisa? You would say is b'chotzim yuchedus l'peiros, ve'enim yuchedus l'shvarim. Rabbi Yosef's braisa would be talking about a chotzer that's meant only for bringing in peiros, and it's not meant to bring in animals. So therefore, d'lagabeshen hamil chatzara nizak. So therefore, now, relative to the hezek of shein, it's considered the chotzer of the nizak exclusively. Now we can call it sdei acher because Ruven, the owner of the animal, had no business bringing the animal in there. And in fact, the Gemara says dekanami. In fact, you can prove that from the wording of the braisa, from the wording of the two braises respectively. Because consider, in Rabbi Yosef's braisa, in both of them we mentioned chatzara shutfin, but in Rabbi Yosef's braisa, then we continued with the case of a pundak. Now a pundak is an inn. A pundak is an inn or a hotel, right? People come and stay there for one day or for a few days or whatever. So now it's not so it's the kind of place people regularly bring in their peiros and their kalim over there when they're staying over. It's not the kind of place where you would usually bring in a shur. So therefore, somebody brings in his shur and it causes damage, then that's his fault and he's chayim. On the other hand, in the second braisa with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, it mentioned chatzara shutfin, and then it mentioned bika, which means a valley, which is a place with a whole bunch of fields in it. That's the kind of place where you would regularly bring in oxen as well, because you bring them in to plow the fields. So therefore, it's much more likely to say, like we said, the first braisa is talking about then where it's a place where oxen are not normally brought in, and therefore it's considered sdei acher, and therefore it's chayev for shein veregel. And the second braisa is talking about a place where oxen are normally brought in, and therefore he's potter for that, because he can say, I had every right to have my oxen there, and you should have put your peiros or your kalim away more carefully. Okay. So Shmamina, so that proves that distinction is valid. So again, according to Rashi, this is the stum of the Gemara pointing out that distinction, meaning Rabbi Lozer himself wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that distinction. He would say the Braisa of the Rosh Hashanah Lozer is correct, and as far as Rabbi Yosef's Braisa, I don't know about that. It's contradicted by the other one, and it's not necessarily accurate or something. I stand by my position. He would say that no matter what, you're potter for Shein Veregel and Chatzara Shukfin. On the other hand, according to the David, this is all part of Rabbi Lozer's point, saying that it's true. There are going to be cases where he's going to be chayev. There are going to be cases where he's potter. It depends what the use of the chatzar is.
So the very simplistic explanation, and it doesn't bring much chidush to the whole argumentation here, to say that one is in one situation and the other one is in another situation.
No, because you still have to consider. After all, shouldn't Shimon either way be able to say, look, it's a place where I'm entitled to put my peiros, you should be responsible to prevent your animal from damaging over there. And therefore we're saying, no, it depends whether Reuven is able to say, look, I have the same way as you have a right to have your Peiros there. I have a right to have my animal there. Therefore, as far as that's concerned, it's as if it was Rishus HaRabim. Look, in Rishus HaRabim, you also have the right to have your Peiros over there. But if my animal steps on your Peiros in Rishus HaRabim, not my problem. You have to put your Peiros in a safer place. So therefore, so that's the chiddush that where the chotzer is used for both things, Peiros and Shvarim, that yeah, just as much as it's Reuven's responsibility to watch his animal, it's equally well Shimon's responsibility to make sure that its Peiros are in a safe place. On the other hand, if it's not, then we're saying that it is considered Rishus Acher, even though again Reuven, it's not completely Sde Acher, because Reuven does have certain rights over that chotzer. He would be able to bring in his own Peiros, but he doesn't have the right to bring in his shirt over there. So there is a chiddush in it. It's not something that would be so. Now, once the Gemara points out the distinction, then of course it becomes more obvious, but you wouldn't have realized that without the two braises and without the Gemara making the distinction.
You can almost imply one situation from the other. I mean, it brings
that's the style of the Gemara often, that it'll do that. But in any case, yeah, there is a certain chiddush in it. Otherwise, you still might have thought that since he has certain reshuyas in that chotzer, maybe it can't be considered stay acher, and therefore we have to stress that it's not so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So the maski for Rav Zeira, but so Rav Zeira asks exactly that. So it's not going to be so posh. Rav Zeira points out, look, since the property is one which is meant to bring in Peiros, meaning either one is able to bring in Peiros over there, don't you require then that it has to be stay acher for shame or regal to apply? It has to be property that belongs to somebody else, veleka, and here you don't have it, because either one has the mazik also has the right to have his Peiros over there. By the way, I forgot to mention, Rashi mentions about a punduk. Why is it that a punduk is not a place for shvarim? Rashi points out, practically speaking, when people stay overnight over there, people stay over for a day or a few days or whatever, you have merchants bring in over there, they bring in their wares, they bring in their merchandise. They don't want shvarim over there because then it'll damage their things. So even though, in other words, of course, you might conceivably have that a person who's staying at that punduk might bring his ox or his horse or whatever with him, but they're going to make sure it's kept well away from the kalim. Because you have merchants are coming over there. Imagine you have a guy coming through there with a whole bunch of pots to sell or whatever, you know, and he's staying overnight at this inn. Where he's gonna want to stay at a place where he's gonna be fairly well sure that nobody's gonna bring in their ox over there and literally be a bull in a china shop, you know. So therefore, that's why Pundek is assumed to be a place that's not for shvarim.
Some hotels are, you know, they allow trucks and bus parks, and they don't have it.
This is also true, yeah. Right? Yeah, that would be an example. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so again, Rav Zeira's question is, if it's miyuchedes l'peiros, don't we require for him to be chayav for shein and regel? It has to be sde acher, and here it isn't because Reuven and Shimon have equal rights to bring peiros in here. Normally, Abaya says no. Kivin de enem yuchedes l'shvarim sada acher kuvin bay. The fact is, it's not the kind of place where you normally bring in oxen. So relative to that, it can be considered sde acher because, as far as it's sure, that was brought in without reshus. So that can be, so yeah. Relative to that, it can be considered sde acher. Yeah. Okay. Omelet of Acha Medifti L'Ravina. Now, says Rav Acha Medifti to Ravina. So what did we establish now? The two braises are not contradicting each other because each one is talking about a different case. Well, Lema Minimasnisa Loi Pligi, given that we're saying the braises don't argue, Amuroi Nami Loi Pligi, or we may be able to say that the Amuroi and Rav Chista and Rav Elazar are not disagreeing either. So maybe the braises, just like the braises, one is talking about a place that's miyuchad l'shvarim, for example, a valley, and the other one is talking about any miyuchad l'shvarim, for example, an inn. Maybe by the same token, going back to the beginning of the sugya, when Rav Chista says that in a chatzara shutfin a person would be chayev for shein and regel, is talking about the second kind where it's not meant to bring in animals. And then Rav Elazar, who says that he's potter, would be talking a place that is meant to bring in animals. So can we say that maybe in fact there's no machlokas in the first place? So Ravina answers, indeed, that's so. You could understand it. You could answer it that way. And in fact, Tosfos points out, you could say that Well, okay, that's never mind. We'll get to that soon. So you could answer indeed that they're not arguing. The im timtza lo mapligi, if you want to say that in fact they are arguing, you could say the only argument might be but kushya did obzera over piruka da by pligi. The sole machlokas might be about where you have a chotzer that's meant only for peiros and not for oxen. The question would be, do we hold like a buyer's way of looking at it or Rabzera's? Do we look at it? Reb Zera's question was that in order for it to be b'sdei acher, it has to be that he has no reshus at all. So Reb Elazar might take that view and say, therefore, it's not b'sdei acher, and therefore he's potter on those grounds, whereas Reb Chista would take the view like a buyer that it is considered b'sdei acher since he doesn't have the right to bring his ox in there. So in other words, so you could say the sole argument between them might be where the chotzer is only meant for peiros, not for oxen, and that would be the machlokas. But you're right that you could say that they would both agree that if it's a chotzer that's meant for both peiros and oxen, then in fact both of them would agree that he's potter. Tosfos then points out that you could have that in Rabbi Yosef's Braisa, when you have the case of Loilazeh, we have the case where the Chotzer doesn't belong to either one, then the Gemara is going to explain soon that means it doesn't belong to either one, but it belongs to one of them. So you could say that it means that one of them has the right to bring his oxen and his payless in there and the other one doesn't. Gufa. So now let's get back to, let's analyze that braisa of Reb Shimon Elazar more carefully. We said, Reb Shimon Elazar omer ben izakin. So Reb Shimon Elazar said four rules as far as the reshuyas, as far as where a nezek might take place. So let's look at the first one. Kol shu reshus le nizek below the mazik. So we said that if it's a place that belongs to the nizek, and where the mazik has no permission to go in the first place, chayav bakol, then he's chayav in everything. So now it means exactly what it sounds like. It means he's going to be chayav for Shane and Regal and Karen. But the Gemara points out al hakol lekatoni. The Braisa did not use the expression al hakol, which would suggest that he's chayav for any type of the arbo of his nizikin that takes place over there. But rather, the expression that it uses, el chayev bakol, he's chayev in everything, which implies, therefore, that implies that he's chayev for full mezek. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. The Lashon bakol implies that he's chayev for the full mezek. Bakulin nezek. So yeah, he'd be chayev for the entire nezek. Money. Now, who would that be like? Reb Tarfon. Apparently, then this Braisa would be appointed of Tarfon de Omar, where he says in various places in our Masechta, Meshuna Keren, unusual Keren, meaning by definition, Keren is unusual, because we learned at the beginning of the Masechta the difference between Keren and the other Ovis Nezikin is it's unusual. It's not, an animal can gore, an animal can kick or bite or do any of the other things, but it's unusual for it to do that, which is why the Torah establishes the concept of Tam and Mord as far as that. So Reb Tarfon says, "Meshuna keren, unusual keren, b'chatzan ha-nizek, if it takes place in the nizek's chotzer, nezek shalom meshalim, then he's paying the entire nezek." Meaning, Reb Tarfon would say, "When do we say that you have tam versus mu'ad, chatzin nezek versus nezek shalom? Would be if it was in reshus ha-rabim, or in a property that belonged to both of them, or whatever. But if it's in the chotzer of the nizek, Reb Tarfon is going to say he's always going to pay nezek shalom." In the next parak, we're going to learn about it more extensively and where Reb Tarfon gets that concept from.
Even if you got there, because Listin.
No, we're not. No, if Listin went, if Listin broke down the door or whatever, then they're the ones who are high. We're going to learn about that more in the sixth panel. But we're talking about in the regular case, in other words, where it's the Chatzara Nizek and the Mazik Shur somehow got in there because the Mazik was the owner of the Shur was careless and the Shur got in there. So Reb Tarfon says, if now it gores in that Chatzara Nizek, the owner of the Shur is going to be paying Nezek Shalom regardless. Even if it was a town. So Ema Sefer. However, look at the end of the Braisa, where it gave the fourth category, Loy Lazer. We said if it's a chotzer that doesn't belong to this one and doesn't belong to that one, which again we assume means it doesn't belong to either one of them. Means kugun chotzer she'ena shel shneim. So a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them, chayev b'ala shein v'ala regel. So then we said he's chayev on it for shein and regel. Well, my loylozev loylozev. Well, what do we mean that it doesn't belong to that doesn't belong to this one and doesn't belong to that one? Ilema loylozev loylozev klal eladacher. You're saying that it means it doesn't belong to either one of them, it belongs to somebody else, to some third party. Well, why should they be, so we're saying he's chayev for shein v'regel, but why? Why should he be chayev? It's not sde acher because it doesn't belong to the nizik. Sde acher, in other words, what do we mean over here? We don't mean that they damaged Levi's property in that chotzer. Obviously, they're chayev. What we mean is it's a chotzer that belongs to Levi, and Reuven and Shimon placed payrus over there. And now we're saying if Reuven's ox goes and damages those payrus and eats them or steps on them or whatever, then Reuven's going to be chayev. Why? It's not Sdei Acher. It's not Shimon's sodeh. It's Levi's sodeh. So why should Reuven be chayev for what happens to Shimon's payrus over there?
The previous case.
No. So we're talking about, in other words, the Braisa is saying that you have a situation where loy lozeh v'loy lozeh. You have a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them. So then we're saying he's chayev on shein and regel, and then as far as keren, it's a chatzi nezek and nezek shalom respectively. Chotzer shein eshol shneim would mean, in other words, that you have the nizek and the mazik is Reuven, the nizek is Shimon, and the property belongs to Levi. Well, then it's not sdei acher because it's not Shimon's property. So the same way as Reuven's going to be potter and shosar abim because not sdei acher, don't we require that it would be Shimon's property? So Mela, we said before, if Shimon owns it jointly with Reuven, okay, then we can talk about whether it's sdei acher or not, depending what Reuven is allowed to bring in there. But if Shimon has no ownership over the property at all, then how can we, if it belongs to a third party, how can we call it sdei acher? Obviously, then the braisa must mean it doesn't belong both to this one and to that one. It belongs only to one of them. So it belongs to the nizik. Now, in that case, how is it different than the previous case where we said that at the beginning of the braisa we said Rishos HaNizik? We'll talk about that soon. But the point is that evidently we have to understand the braisa as talking about that the nizik owns this property. That's why Yechayev for Shein V'Regel. Well, the Katoni Sefer, but the mission, but the braisa then continues. Tam Mashalim Chatzin Nezik Umur Mashalim Nezik Shalim. But then we said that if there was Keren over there, then he's paying Nezik Shalim or Chatzin Nezik respectively. Asom L'Rabbanon. Now that part would go according to the Chachamim, the Amri, where they say Meshuna Keren Machatzana Nezik, unusual Keren in the Chotzer of the Nezik, Chatzin Nezik Udu Mashalim, pays only Chatzin Nezik when it's a Tam, as usual. They argue with Reb Tarifin, as we're going to learn in the next parak, why they do that. So the question is, Reisha Reb Tarifin or Sefer Rabbanon? So what do we have a braisa over here where the beginning is like Reb Tarifin and the end is like the Chachamim? So the beginning of it is saying, again, that if it was in Chatzar HaNizik, then he's paying Bakol, which implied that he's paying the entire Nezik. But now at the end of the braisa, we're saying that if it's Chatzar HaNizik, which we're understanding now, Loy Lozeh, means that it's also Chatzar HaNizik, and we're saying that he's paying only Chatzi Nezik, but Tam. So what's going on over here? Who does this braisa follow?
Previously, you said it's from the Tafshin, only a Hosea.
Yeah, but that's the question. At the end of the Braisa, then we're saying that he's paying Chatzin Nezik or Nezik Sholim. According to the Tafshin, if it's Rishus HaNizik, he's paying Nezik Sholim regardless.
Right.
So that's the question.
He can't have Rishus say
for on the face of it, one Braisa is not going to have the beginning of it like one Tana and the other like another Tana. And the answer is ain't. As a matter of fact, yes. Here we're going to have an example of that. As in fact, Shmuel says just that to Rav Yehuda. He says, Shinina, sharp one, or big toothed one, or whatever you have, that's a name for him all over Shas. Shvoik Masnissin, set aside this Braisa, in other words, set aside trying to think that this Braisa is going to go according to one opinion, the Ta Abasroi, and follow me in understanding this Braisa. Yes, Reisha Rav Tarif was Sefer Rabbanon. So yeah, you have no choice but to say that. And in fact, we see that Shmuel says explicitly to Rav Yehuda, you're kvetching zich to try to figure out how you're going to make this braisa work. Don't waste your time on it. Just know that that's how it is. On the other hand, Ravina Meshmei de Rava Amar Kulah Rav Tarifin. On the other hand, Ravina says in the name of Rava, no, you could make the braisa work entirely according to Rav Tarifin, because my loyla zev loyla zev, what does the braisa mean in the fourth case where it doesn't belong to this one or to that one? Means loyla zev loyla zev peiros el dechad means as far as peiros, only one has permission to put his peiros over there. but it is jointly theirs as far as that either one can bring a shor over there. So again, the lagabe shein havi lachatzara nizak. So relative to shein, it's considered the chotzer of the nizak because only Shimon had the right to have his payless over there.
Nizak, only the nizak had
the rishus to bring his payless over there. Yeah. Lagabe keren havi lo rishus rabin. As far as keren, though, it's like rishus rabin because both of them have the right to have their oxen over there. So even Reb Tarfon, when Reb Tarfon holds you do Nezik Shalim, only what's in Rosh Hashanah Nizik. He was not exclusively Rosh Hashanah Nizik, because the Mazik has the right to have his Shor there as well. Therefore, even Reb Tarfon is going to agree it's Nezik Shalim and Chatzin Nezik, respectively.
Even though the Paris only has one.
So the Paris, only one of them has permission, but Karen, both of them have permission to have their animal in. That's according to Rashi's Girsa. Tosfos brings a different girsa. Tosfos, Rabbi Natam, says that no, the other way around. We're saying that that neither one of them has the right to bring their shor in there. But as far as Paris, one of them, loy lozev l'shvarim, that neither one has the right to bring their ox in here. So now, looking at it from the point of view of bringing in the ox, it's considered chatzara nizek because you had no right to bring your ox in there and it damaged the Paris. As far as oxen, since he had no business bringing his oxen there in the first place, then that would be more like Rosh Hashanah, and therefore he'd be chayav chatzin nezek and nezek shalom respectively.
Lozev goes
on the page. So lozev lozev would go according to Rabbi Tam's girsa, right? Would go on that loy lozev. So right. So the girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara is loy lozev peiros elo dechad. Only one of them has the right to bring his peiros in here. Tosfos' girsa is that loy lozev shvarim. That neither one has the right to bring a shor in there. Yeah.
The wording of the brisa is different.
Yeah, it's just, and not really, no, either way, the wording of the brisa is loy lozev, but what do you mean loy lozev? The Gemara, the girsa of the Gemara in front of us, which is the girsa of Rashi, is that loy lozev means it doesn't belong, it doesn't, not that, not like we thought before, it means that it doesn't belong to either of them, but rather it means that as far as some particular detail, it belongs to only one of them. I have examples of that. The Ramban gives an example where the word loy lozev means something like that. It means that it belongs to neither of them, but it belongs to one of them, which would be the case over here. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you don't need that. According to him, loy lozev means neither one has the right to bring their shor in there.
But the
payless, yeah. Okay. Well, the Gemara asks, in that case, what do you mean that? So according to Shmuel, then it comes out. So it's easy to understand why the Braise is saying four different categories. Because again, we have when it comes to Keren, you have a Machloekas, Reb Tarfon, the Chachamim. What happens in this kind of Chotzer? And therefore, Reb Shimon Elazar had to point out you have four different categories because depending whether you go according to the Reb Tarfon or according to the Chachamim, you're going to have different rules over here. But according to Ravina's answer. According to Ravina's answer, then the question is now going to be Ihochi our boss. So what do you mean four categories? Shloisha havu. In that case, you really only have three categories because you have already the fourth one. Loy lozev. We can already deduce from the previous ones. Rashi explains because it's already as far as Shane, it's considered a chatzara nizik, and we already know that from earlier. The chatzara nizik is chayev for everything, and As far as it being a property of Shutfin, as far as Keren, we already said Chatzara Shutfin Rabika. So why does it need? Why would it even need to mention the fourth category, Loy lozev altogether? And what is it adding? The answer is Amar of Nachmitzchak Shloisha Klolos Ba'arba Makomis. You're right. What it means is there are three general types, but they're within four. They're four different places because now we have it's true. You only have three kinds of dinim: Rosh Hashanah Nizik, Rosh Hashanah Mazik, and Chatzara Shutfin. But within Chatzara Shutfin itself, you have to distinguish between different kinds of Chatzara Shutfin, whether it's one that's meant for Paris and oxen, or only Paris or only oxen, and therefore you're going to have that distinction. The Raivad actually points out, I mean, on the face of it, then you have other cases as well. What about a third party's rishus? What about a chatzara shutfin where one is only allowed to bring peiros and the other is only allowed to bring oxen? And he gives explanations of why. In the case where it's a reshus that belongs to somebody else altogether, then that would be the bika. That would be like the valley over there. And the same thing with Rosh Hashanah, and the same thing of a chotzer that doesn't belong to either one of them. And as far as where one is allowed to bring in peiros and the other one is allowed to bring oxen, then that's also included in one of the other ones. Because
what happens if the shur causes damage? After all, if the shur were to do keren over there, then if the shur were to do keren over there, he'd be chayev. So you can't call it exclusively a chatzara mazik. Because after all, a chatzara mazik could be potter for keren, because you'd say you have no business coming in over here. Therefore, the price didn't bother listening.
Okay. Mishnah says, here's more general rules. As far as nizakim. So the first Mishnah, the first three Mishnayas of our Masechta are kind of like a general introduction to the whole concept of nizakim. The first one gave the obvious nizakim. The second one gave the criteria under which, when do we say that nizikin apply? Only we said only if it's nechassim that belong to a Jew and nechassim that are not of hekdesh and reshus and nizik ba'mazik, as we just explained the different possibilities. Now this Mishnah is going to continue on that theme, talking about the rules as far as the payment of nizikin, basic rules as far as the payment of nizikin. And again, it's given in this sort of cryptic form, similar to the previous Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to have to explain it phrase by phrase. So the Mishnah says, cryptic means like very shorthand kind of, yeah. We had earlier on Daf Tes, where the Gemara pointed out, or Daf Vav rather, where the Gemara pointed out the Tana of our of the first Mishnah in our Masechta, when it said Chav HaMazik instead of Chayev, it said he was a Tana from Yerushalayim, where they use very brief language, therefore use Chav instead of Chayev. So really, we kind of see that in all three of these Mishnayos, where they're all using this very brief Loshen, and we have to figure out what they mean. So the Mishnah says Shum Kesef. The evaluation is with money, which what that means we'll see in the Gemara. Shava kesef, he has to pay with shava kesef. Bifnei beistin, it has to be done in front of beistin. Va'al pi edim, it has to be based on what edim, based on the testimony of edim. Bnei chorin, those edim have to be free Jews, not avodim. In other words, bnei bris, they have to be Jews, not goyim. Va'hanoshim b'chalam nezek. Women are included in the concept of nizakin, whether the woman herself or her property is a mazik or a nizik. Either way, she's equally well chayev with a man. We're going to learn later on in the Masech that, practically speaking, she may not have resources to pay off the nizik, because after all, everything she has is meshubad to her husband. So we're going to learn later on not necessarily is her husband responsible to pay on her behalf. We'll get to that later on. We'll get to that in the eighth parak. We'll discuss that point. But anyway. But in principle, they're included in the concept of nezek, because we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow why that is. V'hanizik v'hamazik v'tashlumin, both the nizik and the mazik share in the payment, meaning, in other words, that there were going to be times, as we learned previously, where the mazik is not paying 100% of the damage for various reasons, and the nizik has to bear some of the loss. Now, we talked about before, for example, about the nevela and pchas nevela and all of that, and carbon also, right? Yeah.
How do you get
Okay, so the Gemara says, my shum kesef. What is that first word? Those first words in the Mishnah, shum kesef, what does that mean? Omer of Yehuda, shum ze lo yehe el b'kesef. Means the evaluation of the nezek has to be done based on money. They have to actually figure out the dollar value of the nezek and then figure out on the basis of that how much he has to pay. Therefore, tenein aloha the tananabanon. With that, therefore, we've learned in the Mishnah briefly what it says in more detail in a braisa. And again, that means, as we've learned before, Rashi mentions that point, that it means the braisa is reliable and we can accept it la'alocha. Para shehizika talis. If a para damaged a talis, for example, it stepped on it in the chotzer of the nizik, again, if it was in Rosh Hashanah, then not, because you could say you have no business putting your talis in Rosh Hashanah, but like this, it was in Rosh Hashanah nizik, and the animal stepped on it and damaged it. The talis shehizika para, and a talis damaged a para. Now, you have two, well, we'll talk about in a second, two different ways of explaining the scenario. Anyway,
Ein omim teitze pora betalus vitalis para. We don't say, well, okay, you know, you trade off the para for the talus, or the other way around. So in other words, let's not bother figuring out the actual dollar values. We'll just say, for example, that we'll just say, for example, okay, look, your para damaged the talus. We're not going to figure out the exact dollar value. We'll just say that the nizik will be able to take the para in payment of the damage. We don't say that. El shaman oisa b'domim. We have to figure out the dollar value of it, and then for example, if the damage to the talus is worth less than the value of the para, then he's not getting the entire para. He's only the other guy has to pay him an equivalent amount. I mean, if it requires now that he sells the para and takes the money to pay him, then fine, he does that. Or if they decide that from now on we'll be partners in it or whatever, then they can mutually agree with that, but they have to both agree to that.
I'm assuming that the talus damage the animal because that properly belonged to the
So wait, so wait. So from Rashi is mashma that we're talking about two different cases. Well, in Rashi it's not so clear. Rather, are we talking about one continuous case where the para damaged the talus and the talus also damaged the para? For example, so the talus damaging the para, Rashi points out, for example, let's say the animal tripped over the talus and broke its leg. So now the way that we have it printed in Rashi in front of us seems to imply that we're talking about two different scenarios, because the one where it damaged the talus would be in Chatzar HaNizik, and the other one would be in Rishus HaRabim. Now Tosfos, on the other hand, quotes Rashi to say that we're talking about one continuous case. We're talking about that each one damaged the other, and you might think to say, well, in that case, it all shakes out, it all balances out. Your para got damaged by my talus, but my talus got damaged by the para. So let's just call the whole thing off. So we don't say that. We figure out the actual value of the respective nizukin and compensate the one with whichever one caused the greater hazard. So Tosfos then argues on that explanation. One thing Tosfos points out is that in that case, where exactly did this happen? I mean, if the talus was in Rishus HaRabim, then the owner of the para is going to be potter for what happens to the talus, because you had no business putting your talus in Rishus HaRabim. If we're talking about in Rishus HaNizik, well, then you had no business bringing your animal in there. So in that case, if your animal got damaged by my talus and it fell and broke its leg, it's not my problem. So what exactly would be the scenario? Therefore, Tosfos prefers to say that we are, in fact, talking two different. So first of all, Tosfos says, now it is also true that later in the Masechta, it mentions this point more explicitly, that if each side has a damage, then you figure out which one is the greater damage and you go accordingly. Fine, that the Gemara is not so bothered by, because like we said before, ton of Ahodim Afadish. Here the Mishnah is giving brief general rules, and then later on in the Masechta, it'll develop out the rules in more detail. But still, you have that question about the different locations. Tosfos therefore brings that prefers to say, Rabbi Natam says that no, what it means is there's two different cases, a para that damaged a talus or a talus that damaged a para, each one in the respective reshus where the thing would apply. And the point is that we don't say, for example, you should take the whole talus or you should take the whole para. So in the case, for example, where the animal tripped over the talus and broke its leg, actually it's going to be there's no chidush that you don't take the talus because then the talus is considered like a burr. A burr you don't pay out of the actual value of the burr. You pay the actual dollar value. But the other way around, Tosfos explains later on in the Masechta, it talks about there is an opinion that says that in some cases where you have mutual damage, then you do just give the animal to the nizik. So Tosfos continues to discuss. You have cases over here about collecting from Yisoimim, which the Gemara is going to touch on further on. So you have different points over here where the chiddush is that nevertheless you don't just say one damages the other. You don't just say that we call the whole thing off. We actually have to figure out the amounts. The Rambam mentions a somewhat different point as well. The Rambam says, in other words, the point is, let's say exactly that, as far as making themselves partners in it. Conceivably, the Mazik could say to the Nizik, look, instead of me having to sell my animal and then give you the money, how about we become partners in it, and you'll own a partnership in the animal, and eventually when I shecht it or do whatever with it, then you'll get your share. If the Nizik is willing to agree to that, fine, but the Mazik can't force the Nizik to agree to that. Okay, so that's what it means. Shum kesef in the Mishnah means that we actually have to evaluate the actual amount of the damage, and then we decide the payments appropriately. Next, shove kesef. The Mishnah had said that he pays with shove kesef. So what does that mean? The Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, shove kesef, melamed she'en based niskok in elon l'chosim she'esh la'en achrayus. From this we learn that that Beis Din gets involved as far as collecting for a nizik only from property sheyesh lehen achrayus, which means character. Now obviously that doesn't mean that if the mazik doesn't have any character, then you don't take anything else away from him. That would be impossible. What it means is, in other words, if he has character. The Shach explains this in Choshen Mishpat. It means, in other words, that if he has metalplin, then you can collect from them. But if he has karka, then you're going to force him to pay from karka rather than requiring if the nizik wants metalplin, that's different. But otherwise we're going to say that you have to pay with karka. The upper hand, in other words, actually what he learns is, sorry, he says, Yada Mazik Alo Yoina, the Mazik has the upper hand. He can say, given that I have Karka, I only want to pay with that, and basically can't get involved in taking my metalplin. If he only has metalplin and no Karka, then obviously Basin can take from those, because otherwise it's impossible. Otherwise the other guy's not going to be able to collect at all.
And if it's a Karka, it would be Zburius?
No, it would be Idis, we learned before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, he says the Gemara continues to discuss this point. The Gemara ends up saying that we're going to talk about over here a specific case involving Yisoimim. So actually, the Shach says it comes out the Maskana really that Yada Nizik Alo Yona. It's really the Nizik has the upper hand to decide what he's going to get as far as Kauko or Metalton or whatever, except in the special case of Yisoimim. On the other hand, he said the Smeh there on Choshen Mishpat argues with that and says that the Mazik has the upper hand. In any case, the point is that so when we say over here that Ein Niskok and Elul Nischosim Sheyasan Achrayus, we don't mean that Beis Din will never collect from anything else. We mean that that's the first thing they go for. Avlim Kodem Nizik, the toughest Metalton. However, if the Nizik does go ahead and grab Metalton in payment for the debt, Beis Din Goyvin Leimahem, then Beis Din will allow him to collect out of that because he already grabbed it, and therefore he's mochzik in him. So again, fine. So that's what it means, shove kesef. It means, in other words, the mazik is obligated to pay with shove kesef, meaning that he pays with land, but that's the first thing that Beis Din will try to get from him. It doesn't mean, by the way, I mean, it is true that it means also he can pay with shove kesef to kesef, but that we already learned earlier. The Mishnah doesn't have to tell us that over here. Okay, Omamar, so let's analyze that point. Shove a kesef malama chain based in the skokan el and a chosim shesh lan achrayos. My mashma, how do you see from the word shove a kesef that it means karga? Omer, Rabba Ba'ula, dover a shove a kol kesef. Because the word shove a kesef implies something that is worth any amount of money you pay for it. My new, dover shein lo yana, meaning that we're talking about something to which the dinim of ayna do not apply. Which is karka. Metautlin, you have the din of ayna, that if you overcharge for it more than one-sixth, then if you overcharge a sixth or more, then there's considered ayna, one-sixth. As we're going to learn in Bava Metzia, you have to return the overcharge. More than that, the guy even has the right, the other guy has the right to void the sale and then get back his money altogether and give back the object. But that doesn't apply to karka. So therefore, shove a kesef implies something that's worth no matter how much money you paid for it. Nevertheless, still the sale is valid and it can't be undone. Tosfos actually learns here and in other places in Shas that Einar does apply to karka, but not at the rate of 1/6, but rather only if it was double. If you have a piece of karka that was supposed to be worth 100 and someone charged 200 for it, then Einar would apply. The Rambam, the Rif, and the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim disagree with that point as well. They say there's no Einar for karka at all, no matter how much you overcharged for it. But in any case, even Tosfos is saying, fine, it doesn't mean kol kesef, but it means a lot more kesef than you would have from a talisman. Well, the Gemara asks, in that case, my new dover she'en lo yana. So what do you mean, something that doesn't have yana? Avodim ushtaris nami ein lo yana. Well, the same thing applies if you sell an Eved Or if you sell a shtar, there's also no einah. Either no einah at all, like the Rif and the Rambam, or einah only if there was a markup of 100%, like Tosfos. But either way, the point is that then you should say the same din should apply to them. Maybe you should maybe based in should go collect from avodim or from shtaris. Why dafka karka? El omer about ula davar nikne bekesef. It means something that can be acquired where the kinyan is accomplished with money. Without Meshicha or anything else. Well, the Gemara asked Avodim and Shtoris Nami Nikim Bekesef. New Avodim and Shtoris are also collected in the same way. Avodim are also acquired with Kesef. Shtoris are also. Now, Rashi says, I don't know where it says that Shtoris are acquired with Kesef. Tosfos, in fact, says, take out the word Shtoris. It doesn't belong over here. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Chananel has a Girsa, not Shtoris, but Shfochis. So Avodim or Shfochis, those are acquired with money. And the Meiri points out that after all, if you buy a piece of karka and you acquire it with kesef, automatically along with that comes the shtar. So therefore, in that sense, you can say that a shtar is acquired with kesef, not a shtar choyv or something like that, but we mean a shtar of the ownership of the property. So the question is, Avodim and Shtoris or Shfochis, whatever, can also be acquired with Kesef. Again, why are we saying Shova Kesef means exclusively land? Elo, Amar Ravashi, Shova Kesef, Veloy Kesef. The word Shova Kesef implies something which is not itself money. Vahani Kulu, Kesef Ninu, all the other things that we mentioned, Avodim and Shtoris and everything, they are considered kesef because, like we learned the other day, you can take them to another city and sell them over there. That's what we said. That's why Subin, we said that all metalpin are considered metav because you can take them any place else and convert them to cash. Only land, you can't do that, and therefore only land is considered shova kesef, something that intrinsically itself is not money, and you can't turn it into money unless you're going to sell it to somebody over here because you can't take it to another place. Okay. Well, the Gemara continues. Rami led of Yehuda b'Achinan or of Huna b'Rei b'Mishor. Tana shova kesef. Now again, we're saying shova kesef malamed chain based in the skokan el l'nachasim sheyesh l'anachrayers. So we're saying that based in gets involved and takes from the mazik only karka if he has karka. That is. V'Hatanya l'rabas yoshiv l'rabas shova kesef apilu subin. Didn't we learn the other day that when it says yoshiv, it means that you can pay with anything, even bran. So that means that based in will get involved with that as well. And the answer is Hoch Maiskin and Biyasmi. We're talking about over here where the Nizik, where the Mazik died, and now you want to collect from his Yisoyim. So now, if he left them Karka, then you can collect from that. If he left them Metalplin of a Yosim, or not Meshubat, to a Baal Choyv, and therefore you can't, therefore you can't take from them. Well, the Gemara says Ibiyasmi. So if you're talking about Yisoyim, Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Braisa, where it said Im Kodem Nizik. If the Nizik Metalplin, if the Nizik went and grabbed Metalplin, based in Govin Lomahem, then based in will allow him to collect from them. Why? Ibi Yasmi, am I based in Govin Lomahem? If it's from Yisoyim, why? The fact is their property, their Metalplin is not Meshubad to the Baal Chayv, so why should he be able to collect, even if he has from that? And the answer is, Kedu Omer Rava, Omer Rav Nachman, Shetofas Mechayim, just like in another context, Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman, we're talking about where he grabbed them while the father was still alive. The same way you could be talking about over here, we grabbed them while the father was alive, and therefore it's not a question, therefore it's not a shibud of property of Yisoyim anymore, so therefore he's entitled to keep. Now they're Yisoyim, but the fact is he already had chazaka on it while the father was alive, so therefore that chazaka helps him even now where the Yisoyim can't go to Beis Din and have it taken away from him. So now Beis Din will say, okay, well, you took 150, you were only owed 100, so fine, give them back 50, but you can keep the other 100. Fine. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and deal with, again, each of the phrases in our Mishnah, what it's coming to teach us and what it's coming to be.